What's going on, guys? Thanks for tuning into the Local Crown Podcast, where we're going to teach you how to wage war on your competition and earn your local crown, also known as the top spot on Google.
What is up, Local Crown Entrepreneurs? I am your host, Antonia, and I have with me today Mitch Russo, and I'm super excited to talk to him. He has a ton of experience, wisdom, and knowledge about starting a business, growing your business, coaching. I'm super hyped to get into it. So welcome, Mitch. Why don't you tell us about how you got started, how you got to where you are today, and a little bit about your history?
Sure. I got started basically as a youngster starting a software company. So I started a software company when I was in my 20s, and it worked out pretty well. We ended up with a couple of 250,000 customers. And later we sold that company for eight figures. So I was off to a good start. And then from there, and I'm skipping over a lot of details, but the next thing that happened after I sold the company is people kept coming to me and saying, "Hey, Mitch, that was pretty cool. How'd you do that?" And that's how I became a coach. So then I started helping others position their company, get it ready for sale. And part of that was using some of the proprietary tools that I had been developing over the years for my software company, like certification. So certification became a key element of why my company grew in value as fast as it did. And I wrote everything about certification that I know in this book here called Power Tribes. And Power Tribes is a blueprint for the certification process, which I had perfected over the years with my own companies and with client companies. And then from there, I ended up in a very interesting business partnership with Tony Robbins and Chet Holmes. And the three of us started a business called Business Breakthroughs International. And that became an incredible success. We generated over almost $30 million in revenue before Chet, my partner, passed away. And when he passed away, I took a break and said to Tony that I needed to back off a bit and just kind of regroup, because Chet and I had been friends for several decades before he passed, and it was very sad for me. So overall, at that point, this goes back about 10 years, I said, well, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to start writing stuff down. And so that's how I wrote my very first book called The Invisible Organization. And then I started getting some great feedback on that. And then at some point, I had the idea that I would start a podcast. And so I did. I started a podcast back in 2017, I believe. We now have over almost 300 episodes in the can. It's been a lot of fun. I use the podcast to educate business owners on how to scale their own company by interviewing other CEOs who've actually done it. So that's really in a nutshell. And here I am today. I wrote the Power Tribes book after that. And today I am working as a SaaS company founder. We have a software product for coaches. And that product is called Clientfolio, and it's designed to completely facilitate the coaching experience for both the coach and the client. And now you're caught up. That's what I do today.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, that sounds super interesting. I'm curious, is the switch from being doing all these things in business to coaching people on how to business? I know they say a lot of times, you become a real master of something when you can teach it to somebody else. Was that a total transition? And how did you kind of manage that?
Well, it never truly was a transition, because I've been building and managing companies all throughout. And then from, with the clients that I work with, it's sort of like a live lab. I get to use the experience that I have to help others, and they then implement some of the things we come up with. And of course, I always feel very gifted and blessed to be with these beautiful people who are smart and ambitious and growing their own business. So I learn from them as much as I can contribute. So it's been a great relationship overall.
Yeah. So it wasn't even different. You just kind of kept like flowing through with what you were already doing. That's awesome. Yep. Mm-hmm. Cool. So when you said that you like started jumping in with Tony Robbins and Chet and all that, what like built you guys so quick? What I guess made you guys so, you said that you went from 5 years to a $30 million company. Like what does that all entail?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that we realized right away is we have to have something to sell. So in order to create something to sell is we organized an event where Chet and Tony and about 15 other very smart people came to stage and spoke. We then recorded all of what was done, about 60 hours of video and audio. And then we spent the next 9 months or so building courses for most of the content that we covered on stage. And then we took those courses and we used a very, at the time, it was very unique. It was a radio to webinar process. So what we would do is we would advertise on the radio and we would then convert people calling in from the radio ads directly into a webinar seat, and they would pay for the webinar seat. So we didn't call it a webinar. We called it basically a business building masterclass. Mm-hmm. And that worked really, really well. We were able to self-liquidate the ads. So for the most part, we broke even advertising by what people paid to get in the webinar. But we upsold our system that I just told you about how we built it. We upsold that to in the webinar, and we were getting enormous conversion rates, like 38, 40% conversion rates. So we also built out a suite of other products that were business-oriented products that other businesses need. So we would teach a concept like how to hire a sales superstar. And then we opened up a division called Superstar Recruiting. So if you love the idea of having a sales superstar on your team, but you didn't want to go through the process of learning how to recruit them and then recruiting them, we would do it for you. And so, and we would do that with all of the topics in our, basically in the course itself. So we would help people create core stories, hire salespeople. We would help them SEO their business as well. We had an SEO division at the time. And that was really working all really, really well. The radio spend, we were spending about $10,000 or $15,000 a month on the radio when we first started. And then as we learned how to perfect the process and make it more and more profitable, that ended up growing to about $135,000 at one point per month on radio. So spending well over $1 million a year on the radio generated far more in terms of lead flow that we're then able to convert in webinars.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah. So if someone were to like be implementing that into their own business, you'd say like that marketing strategy of getting your message out there is super important. And like you should probably dump a good amount of your money into that as a business, right?
Well, again, what I would suggest is that you go through a test phase. So with any new marketing channel, no one ever really dumps a whole lot of money into anything before testing. So when I first started using direct mail as a marketing vehicle back in the 1980s, we basically took 9 months to test each piece to see different colors, different headlines, different taglines, different bonuses, until finally we got to the point where after 9 months of experimenting, we had our reference piece. We were now certain that this would work. And that's when we scaled up and started sending almost 1 million pieces a year in the US mail.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's actually watching and testing is important. And I didn't even think about that, you know, not running and testing my own things. Mm-hmm. So once you hit a certain point and you know, this is what we've got, this is what we're working, then you should dump all your, a good amount into it. And then you just really start building that momentum.
Right.
Awesome. Oh, cool. Okay. So on like a switch with that, when you are doing these new things, what do you suggest in today's time? Like radio was a huge one at a certain point. Like, are you guys seeing a big shift in social media and things like that? Or what would you be testing and experimenting on currently?
Well, currently, social media is, I won't say it's dying, but it's plateauing right now. And the reason I say that is because it's so expensive and lead flow is so poor in most cases that most people get frustrated and give up. YouTube for a while recently was much stronger and was doing well. And then now, you know, these companies are raising the prices. So what used to be, you know, a few dollars a click conversion is now $10 or $20 a click conversion. And that's not sustainable unless you are very, very good at closing from a click. And again, most people fall into this typical categories of conversion, which means that they're going to run out of money before they make more from leads. Radio is coming back in many ways. Radio has broadened considerably. Radio used to be just terrestrial radio. And then, of course, XM came along, Sirius XM, which is now a very large part of it. But more importantly now, we integrate web radio into everything we do when we do marketing campaigns for radio for clients. And what I mean by web radio is we actually buy spots on Pandora. We buy spots on Spotify. We buy, there's so many places now where you can buy spots for, and very, very well targeted. So you could target very carefully and very clearly based on the content of the people who are producing the shows. So social media is great and you can keep doing it until it stops working, but then you'll need other ways. Even direct mail is starting to come back in vogue again because people are realizing that, you know, it's sure it's the old style marketing, but you know what? Not many people are getting a lot of junk mail anymore. Mm-hmm. And now when something does come in that's worth reading, they might actually take the time to read it.
Yeah, no, that's actually super interesting because I recently had a friend of mine say, she's like, I just discovered I love getting mail. And so she like sent out a bunch of Christmas cards. That's really true. Like you got to go to the areas that aren't getting as much attention anymore and you're going to kill it in that area.
Correct.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you said you wrote a book called The Power Tribes. And I know that you kind of specialize in building businesses in their teams. Like you said, you were teaching people how to, you know, create a sales team or hire these certain type of people for their business. I was wondering, like, what are those main things to focus on when building a team and like looking to hire people? And how do you like maintain that culture you're kind of going for?
Well, I would think of culture and subculture. So culture is what the CEO of the company, his values are typically the culture. So the CEO's values and the CEO's why is what the culture typically, overarching culture typically is. But then different divisions have different cultures. Clearly the sales division has a very sales oriented culture, whereas the HR department does not. You know, the HR department has a different culture, but the overarching culture of a company must be set and it must be deliberately done and it must be done with guidelines. So I teach this and train clients on how to create culture inside of companies. And we that, by the way, is a part of the Power Tribe system. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we use something called the Code of Ethics. So between the Code of Ethics, the values of the CEO and the why of the CEO, we are able to very rapidly come up with a series of statements, culture statements that define what the company is and how it should be perceived by the people who work there. And if the CEO is a good communicator, which is important, if the CEO is able to tell that story and share what's going on a regular basis, most CEOs that are older than 30 would think what I'm prescribing is over communicating. But nowadays, as so many young CEOs know, you have to just constantly be communicating with everyone on the team and letting them know exactly what's going on. And, you know, we try not to hide anything. So if there's something going on in the company, if there's a problem, people would rather know the problem and than be kept in the dark. And when you keep people in the dark, that basically strains trust. And so once you are straining trust, then you're destroying your culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. So when you do go into these companies with like lower CEOs, do you often see that like there's just these certain areas that are just very kind of jaded and uncommunicated? And like, how do you reverse that when you come into a company?
Well, you basically help the people who are at the top understand that if they've not defined their culture will take form by itself, and it's never good when it does. Yeah. So if if the CEO is in a bad mood, and you know, maybe his bad mood is reflected in some of his emails that day or some of his chats that day, the rest of the company is going to know it, and they're going to respond as such. So what's important is for the CEO or the client that I'm working with is to understand that culture is a human process, a process of building trust, of building a bridge between who you are and who every individual in the company is. And it doesn't matter if there's 5,000 employees or not. It doesn't matter if they're scattered all over the world. It doesn't even matter if you've never even seen them. What matters is that you are communicating with them and that you are taking an active interest in their welfare. Once you do that, you set the tone for the next stage. Next stage of building that culture, as I said earlier, is defining the overarching values based on the personal values and the why of the CEO. I keep saying that because it's really important. If the CEO is an engineer, he's going to have different goals and objectives than if the CEO is a sales guy, mm-hmm. Or a CFO. And so that's why it's important, so that the culture of the company must originate from the CEO.
Yeah, that's super interesting to think about. I never thought about, you know, whatever the CEO specialized in could kind of have an effect on what they value in the company, because then they could be pushing all their time into the salespeople, but not a certain other area, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's super, a different angle to think about if, you know, you're a CEO specialized in one thing out there. So when it comes to like you guys are just mastering the coaching and things like that, and you guys teach other people how to coach, is that like a weird angle on kind of you implementing your own coaching style into others as well? So like, what do you do with that? And how do you help coaches out there?
So I've been coaching for a lot of years, and you know, I've tried a lot of different ways of getting people to respond to coaching. Mm-hmm. And over the years, I've come to believe that there's really a couple of very core ideas that work super well when working with clients, and they're simple to understand too. And I could share them with you. So the first idea is that it's very simple. If a client is not going to get results, then they're not going to pay you again. And they may not even be happy with the work you did with them. That's pretty simple, right?
Yeah.
So if the client's not going to get results, then you're not a coach. A coach gets results with and through their client. The interesting thing here, though, is that there are many times coaches think they're helping the client get results, but the client doesn't think so.
Okay.
And the reason is because there's no measurement going on. So one of the tools that I created years ago was a measuring system for what we call goals and objectives. And so goals are usually numeric, like what's your percentage of profit this month? How many new visitors did you have? What is your spend rate, et cetera? So we're always setting goals numerically, but we're using accountability to ensure that those goals are being met. So in the client folio software, which I created for coaches, I built my own proprietary systems of tracking goals and accountability directly into the software, and even created a portal for clients to enter their own information. So instead of wasting time on the session asking 5 accountability questions, those can be answered by the client before the session starts. Instead of filling out a chart with all of your goal information, now that can be done in advance of the session by the client. And now the coach can be even more productive. So if you ever get to the point where you're going 6 months or 3 months or whatever the coaching engagement was, and then the client says, well, I don't really think I've gotten results. You just press a key and you could see a full screen set of graphs that say, well, I beg to differ. Look, we started 3 months ago. Look where we are now. It looks to me like you've made a lot of progress.
Yeah, So sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, but without a measurement system, it's impossible to say that.
Yeah, no, that's so true, because sometimes growth is slow too, you know, and it's hard to stick with it if you're not seeing some huge, you know, jump. But after 3 months of something, you can have a large amount of growth. You just don't see that huge jump.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I'm sure that like helps coaches a ton, especially when working with people and trying to keep their clients. And, you know, it's hard to keep that momentum going when you're not seeing that huge jump. Is that like something you've seen? Is it really does hold clients down longer if they can see those slow little growths?
Well, of course. I mean, it's sort of like, think about going on a diet. You know, if you go on a diet and you're on a diet for 45 days and you haven't lost any weight, you're not going to feel too good about continuing to stay on that diet.
Yeah.
You start thinking, oh, maybe this is the wrong diet. Maybe this doesn't work. See, but ultimately, if you're getting on the scale every day and you're writing it down or you're measuring it somehow, then you could look and say, well, you know what? I did lose 2.5 pounds, which is, you know, in 6 weeks or 2 months. It's actually not bad, you know, because if I was a year, I would have lost 24 pounds. So it's people have an incentive to move forward if they see progress. And this is really just a system of showing them how to get progress.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's so cool. So on like a more fun note, you worked with Tony Robbins and Chet Holmes. That's pretty awesome. And like, just to talk about that, do you have like a special thought or like just one moment working with both of them that it was just like stands out to you after all the years?
Well, you know, I'll go back to the first time I met Tony.
Okay.
And I was Tony, myself, and Chet were standing in one of the Las Vegas ballroom hallways, and we're strategizing about something. I forgot what it was at the time, but somebody walked over and said, "Oh my God, you're Tony Robbins. Oh, I can't tell you how much you changed my life. I love you so much. I've listened to all of your tapes and all of your CDs. And oh my goodness, I feel as if it's just such an honor to meet you." And of course, Tony's very courteous, says, thank you, yes, of course. And then he goes away. So we continue our little chat and conversation. And then someone else comes by and says, "Oh my God, you're Chet Holmes." And now he's saying, "Chet, you're not going to believe it. I used your book to grow my business. I doubled my sales. I did this. I did that." And Chet, of course, was very pleased to hear that. And in front of Tony, of course, which was even better. And so my takeaway was that the two of them were almost an ideal and perfect pair. Why? Because Chet really focused on the mechanics of business and Tony really focused on the interior of the business person. And of course, he focuses on the business aspect of it as well. But that moment in time when the two of them were together and those people were coming up and saying hi really clarified for me exactly how to position them as the CEO of the company. And so that was really it was a profound moment for me to finally see exactly what I felt to be true actually showed up in real life.
Yeah, that's super cool though, that you get to be the person like kind of on the outside looking in and seeing how these two really amazing people like each have their own qualities to work the best together, you know? And it takes someone special to see that, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, it was at the time, of course, it was pretty obvious, particularly when presented that way. But and since then, you know, I asked Tony if I could bring my daughter to one of the events, and he said, "Of course." And I said, "Do you think it would be possible if we could sneak away for 30 seconds and just get a picture of the two of you together?"
Yeah.
She said, sure. Let's, you know, my personal assistant will arrange that. So we're at one of his events. I think it was a UPW, Unleash the Power Within, and we're doing a firewalk. And it was after the firework, and it was like 2 a.m. and my phone rings. And it's Tony's assistant and says, "Well, Tony would like to meet with you and your daughter right now." I said, "Great." And so it's, you know, of course, we're dead tired. We're thoroughly exhausted. But if we're tired, you can imagine how tired Tony is. He just stood on stage and spoke for 13 hours. I mean, the guy's amazing. So my daughter, myself, and Tony are sitting together. And he then gets deep into a conversation with my daughter for the next half hour. Awesome. I was thinking to myself, you know, this man is just, he's all heart. I mean, he is such a sweet gentleman. And yes, he's a tough guy. Yes, he is an amazing business person and a brilliant individual, but he still took the time to spend time with me and my daughter. And that meant the world to me.
Mm-hmm. That shows a lot of like respect mutually, you know? And yeah, yep. what a cool like experience to have in general.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Sweet. Was there like any big, like out of takeaway of all your time with, you know, those big businesses, starting your own business, is there any like one major tip you'd give our audience just to like, you know, keep going or something you learned, what you pulled away the biggest?
Well, let's go on. Let's use what you said a minute ago with keep going. Most people who think they have failures quit too early, in my opinion. So when someone says, oh yeah, I tried that. And yeah, we had to shut that one down. That didn't work. Mm-hmm. Well, usually, not always, and unless if they're experienced entrepreneurs or experienced business people with multiple wins under their belt, if they shut it down, they did so for a good reason, and I trust that. But the average person who is getting started in a business doesn't pivot at the right time and then invest more time to go to the next step. Because look, the first thing you do is going to be a learning experience. It may not actually be a business. Later, as you learn, as you evolve this process, that's when you will literally start to see the changes happen in front of you. So just pivot, don't quit, I think is the simplest tip.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that's really smart. Because I think you put so much time into starting something new then, and then you obviously have trials and tribulations in that as you would have in what you were already doing.
Of course.
So yeah, that's awesome. Well, I enjoyed every moment of talking with you today. And I hope our audience got a ton of information on coaching and growing your business and saturating those markets that people aren't in right now. Is there anything you'd like to reach out for them and make sure they know how to find you, tag your website, sure, your books, all that as well?
Sure. Well, they can find everything about me right up at the top of the screen here where it says Mitch Russo 360. So if you go to MitchRusso360.com, you'll find all my websites, the products that I offer, the books that I have written, and even my my personal photography as well. So it's all there.
All there. Awesome. So go check them out. MitchRusso360.com again. And yeah, thank you so much for today. That was awesome.
My pleasure. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Thank you so much. And I hope you guys tune in next time to the Local Crowd Podcast.
Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you learned something. If you have questions, email us at info@thelocalcrown.com. And if you want to get featured in our publication, Inside the Empire, alongside John Lee Dumas, the Entrepreneur on Fire, Jason Waller, the CEO of Power Home Solar, Sharon Lecter, Dan Caldwell, the man that started Tap Out, and the limitless man himself, Jim Quick, for free, then head over to thelocalcrown.com/become a contributor.